Welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode 166. I'm your co-host, Kieran Lefebvre, joined by Adam Childs.
Hello, Kieran. How are we?
We are a we now, aren't we? We're we yeah, people.
We have become a we. Yes, yes. Yes, how you going, bro? You good?
Yeah.
A bit of feedback. I received some feedback on our last episode. I was told that me talking about bananas was our worst intro yet. So,
yep, that's fair. I have to agree with that. It was, I do agree. But maybe this one will be worse. Who knows? Well,
we can only hope. Yes.
So today's episode is basically a response to a troll comment that triggered an idea for this topic that I wanted to bring up. And it's basically the idea of jiu-jitsu for self-defense from the perspective of people that don't train jiu-jitsu. So I thought I'd start off by reading out the troll comment. And no, we're not going to get in the habit of responding to trolls, but this was a comment off of a short that we posted to YouTube. And it was like a little snippet. I can't remember what episode it was from, but it was way back. And basically it was this troll in response to jiu-jitsu. So I'm going to read it out. Imagine dying, going to heaven, and God asks you, how did you die? And you say, someone clutched a gun on me and I started dragging my ass on the ground to save my life because I do jiu-jitsu. First of all, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
My response to that was something along the lines of, don't bring butt scooting to a gunfight. But I think that it's interesting because it also reminded me of a video that I saw from there's this powerlifter guy and he is a fucking monster and he trains jiu-jitsu. I think he's like a blue belt and he made like a reel on Instagram fairly recently. And the caption was something along the lines of what people think jiu-jitsu guys look like in a fight, and it's, you know, pulling guard and butt scooting or whatever, and how they actually look like. And he's like basically full mount on a punching bag, just beating the fuck out of it. And I have to agree with that. So it's the concept that guys that see like these clips, the guys that don't train jiu-jitsu, that see the clips of, you know, people playing guard or the double guard pull and think it's, you know, it's pretty gay or whatever, which I mean, it is a little bit, but everyone that trains jiu-jitsu is not only trained to play guard, they're also trained to play mount, like to get to mount, you know, and mount is the most dominant position that you can be in a fight apart from back control. Like, I just don't understand how they can't see that, but
it's a, that sort of not tangent you went on, but that block of a dialogue that you just gave then, you mentioned so many things that for me segued into other things that I want to talk about, that some are related to this episode, but some completely not. One that's not necessarily related to this episode is for anyone who has listened to the podcast episode from quite a while ago with Hodja Gracie and Lex Friedman, which actually last week something interesting came from that podcast, and so did my thing this week came from that podcast episode. But there's a bit more to that when we get there at the end of the episode. But for those who don't know, and if you listen to this episode, you probably do, Hodja, you know, arguably the greatest of all time and known for finishing people with a cross collar choke from mount. And Lex was kind of intentionally playing the devil's advocate. Like, he kind of kept saying, this is hilarious, I'm arguing with Hodja Gracie about jiu-jitsu. But the argument was essentially that Hodja was saying mount is the most dominant position. And then Lex is like, what about back control? And Hodja's like, no. Like, and they're just arguing about, not arguing, right? So if you've listened to Lex's podcast, he's not a guy who is aggressive and in his form of argument. Mm. But anyway, different topic. That's not the topic today to talk about, which is the more dominant position. But it was just, you know, they were going back and forth and yeah, Hodge was like, no, mount is the most dominant position. But if we just talk about, you know, street fighting, like essentially Hodge's argument was, you know, you're kind of like you said, you take someone uninitiated or someone untrained or whatever, or put someone in a street fight and say, you know, what, like how you can choose any dominant position to be on top of this person, what would it be? Like mounts the position, and Hodger was like, yeah, but you know, back control, you're underneath the person and you can't really immobilize them. And remember, this is coming from a person with the best mount in the world, right? He's like, when you're back control on someone, yes, you're behind them. And, you know, there's all the arguments for why back control is better. But Hodge's like main argument was that, yeah, you can like chase them and stuff, but you can't actually stop them from moving, you know, or if you get someone X amount size, like they can kind of get up and stand up and turn to turtle and all these things. He's like, shake you off. He's like, but mount, they cannot move, you know. And again, coming from someone who, you know, you wouldn't even be able to get one of your shoulder blades off the mat if Hodger had mount on you. Mm. So again, it's coming from a point of view of the guy who has the best of that position in the world. But anyway, that was his main argument. I think if you're looking at a street fight, though, or self-defense, I definitely agree with Hodger. Like, I think mount is for sure the most strong. Anyway, I spoke way too much about what we're not talking about today. But anyway, yeah, like these people, so that initial comment, whether the dude was just, you never know. Some people comment stuff. For all you know, the dude's a black belt in jiu-jitsu and was just writing what, you know, a sarcastic, funny comment. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, saying, imagine dying and, you know, because someone pulled a gun on you and you started butt scooting. It's like saying, like, you know, or to a Muay Thai fighter, like, imagine dying because someone pulled a gun on you and you were doing your hand wraps. It's like, that's, you know, it's so like dumb. Fucking, it doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
And first of all, I'm under no illusions as to the reality of a situation if someone pulls a gun on you or a knife on you. Like, weapons are a whole nother thing, you know, and if you're, fuck man, you can be, I don't care, pick the baddest dude on the planet. Like, you can be Mike Tyson, you can be John Jones, you can be Bruce Lee, I don't care. Like, if someone is out of grappling range and they pull a gun on you, like, I mean, like, what are you doing about it? Unless you're Quick Draw McGraw and you've got a gun too. Like, it's a whole different issue and problem. Self-defense against fucking firearms.
Mm.
Like, it's not a world that we're living in and operating in.
Mm.
This ain't no Krav Maga bullshit. So I don't care who you are, the chances are you're losing that fight.
Yeah, exactly right. And you need to, unless you're living in the United States, and parts of Europe, I suppose, but if you're in Australia.
And South America. But
yeah, unless you're outside of Australia. Yeah. But the point I'm trying to make is, for Australians, guns are never an issue. It's the last thing we think about. If you're getting in a confrontation with someone, one of the last things that's going to go through your mind is, oh, they might have a gun, because it's so statistically unlikely. Guns are so rare. So rare.
Like that, like they might have a knife, you know. Definitely. Maybe.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, to put into perspective, like, I'm now, yeah, I'm closer to 40 now than I am to 35. So I'm late 30s and I've only seen a gun in real life with my own eyes less than 5 times. And, you know, Kieran's perspective of this would be different going through the military. But for me, the only reason I've even seen a gun with my own eyes, and it was the same gun 3 or 4 times over multiple years, is because my dad was a police officer. Is the only gun I've ever seen was my dad. And it wasn't he didn't keep the gun at home. It was only if I was at home as a kid and he, you know, had to stop home on his lunch break, or, you know, as he was passing through, like while he was at work, The gun wasn't kept at home or anything like that. It was only when I saw my dad in his uniform working, he had a gun. Oh, sorry. I mean, obviously, if I see police officers out and about, like they have guns on their hips, but I mean, like seeing a gun.
Yeah, only, I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know? So that's how it's very, very rare in Australia. Mm. Like the thought of someone having a gun is not, it just ain't happening.
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, in Australia, one of the best things you can do for self-defense, apart from like dealing with knives, obviously is running. But I'd say the next best thing is grappling. So I just think it's a redundant comment. And it leads me into something that Mikey Musumeci actually posted this recently. And he basically, it was another one of his nerd rage rants where he was like, I'm so sick of guys taking the piss out of, well, I'm paraphrasing because he doesn't use these words, but basically saying he's sick of people taking the piss out of people pulling guard in jiu-jitsu. And he's like, guys, it's sport jiu-jitsu. Pulling guard is part of the sport. Of course, if it's in a street fight, you're not going to pull guard. And I think that's what it comes back to, is the uninitiated people that don't train jiu-jitsu, when they're looking from an outside perspective, looking in at jiu-jitsu, they see the whole guard game. And that is what they think. Oh, that's never going to work on the street. You know, shit. That's why you're not going to fucking pull guard and try to heel hook someone on the street. Although I have seen a video from South America of someone doing that and successfully heel hooking a guy in a street fight. It was awesome. Well,
yeah, I mean, I think it's for people who don't train, they don't understand that it goes both ways. And in terms of our people who train jiu-jitsu, their ability to, or let's just say grappling as a whole, I guess, you know, their ability to be on the ground as well as like not be on the ground. I mean, that's why I said grappling, because I don't want to get into a debate about like, oh, well, wrestlers are better at, or judokas are better at taking people to the ground, but blah, blah, blah. I just like grappling as a whole. And I don't even want to have the argument about which martial art is better for self-defense, because I mean, obviously I'm biased thinking it's grappling. And when we've spoken about this previously, you know, the examples given, if you're a boxer and someone squares off, you can run, but it all changes when someone grabs hold of you. But there's obviously arguments made for, striking being better. Like if you're in a packed bar or something and, you know, your ability to just 1-2 someone or whatever it is. But, you know, so people who train jiu-jitsu, you might see all the butt scooting stuff, but let's just take, Mike Tyson and put him flat on his back with someone on top of him and say, okay, like I want you to get up off the ground because the dude who's currently on top of you has five friends around who are about to soccer kick you in the head. Like you've got to get up and get out of here. Get Mike Tyson to do that versus asking a blue belt to do it. Assuming the person on top isn't a jiu-jitsu fighter, like take someone who's untrained, put him mount on Mike Tyson, bro, get up and run away because there's five of his friends are about to curb stomp you versus, you know, who's the better fighter? Mike Tyson. Who's going to get up better? The blue belt. So jiu-jitsu people, we do a lot of butt scooting and shit, but we're also very good at, you know, being on top, holding someone down or getting out from being on the bottom. You know, so I think that's a big thing that people don't understand about jiu-jitsu as a self-defense, because the argument they always make is like, yeah, it's great self-defense in a 1v1 situation, but you never want to go to the ground, blah, 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 with multiple attackers, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, no shit, bro. But my ability to not end up on the ground, or if I end up on the ground, my ability to get back up and run away is far superior than to people who don't grapple, right? So, like, your argument's shit either way.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the whole multiple opponents scenario, it depends on the scenario. I've seen this video. I've seen a fight video, right? And it was this guy who was he's an MMA fighter, and he was up against two guys at once. And he didn't even, like, he did a bit of striking, but what was devastating was his takedowns. Like, he double-leg takedowned someone, which, you know, that's grappling. And that's what was the deciding factor in this fight. So he knocked the guy out with the double leg. And then the other guy, you know, I can't remember what happened. But basically he won the fight with grappling. and his ability to you know, control distance, double leg, and then fucking, you know, stay on his feet. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a weird one.
I also think, so coincidentally, I happen to teach one of the, in my opinion, one of the few jiu-jitsu self-defense techniques that's applicable to sport jiu-jitsu, because most of them aren't. And when, if you look at self-defense techniques, really, regardless of the sport martial art that they're coming from, realistically, self-defense techniques only work against people who don't train. Okay. And I've said this before, like, what place do jiu-jitsu self-defense techniques have? Mm. And they have a really good place for teaching beginners who really don't understand the way that two bodies can interact, and they don't understand base and leverage, and they're not very coordinated, or, you know, they don't come from any other sort of physical sport. Like, you know, like, we take for granted how much we already know and the way we already move our bodies. But you take some people, I mean, you can't even get them to do the most, let's say, some self-defense technique where it's like, oh, a drunk person throws a haymaker punch, now put your arm up to block it. And like, they can't even, you're like, oh my God, they can't even do that. So self-defense has a great way of teaching people. Yeah, like, imagine this scenario. Someone tries to punch you and you block, and then like, you want to get really close and hug them because here they can't punch you and blah, blah, blah. So it serves its place. But in terms of the use and application of those techniques, yeah, they only work against people who don't train. But then that, once you're past the, oh, I've used and learnt these self-defense techniques to understand my body and my opponent's body and, you know, base, leverage, all this, they then kind of become useless, because anyone who trains a combat sport, call it jiu-jitsu, boxing, Muay Thai, wrestling, judo, like whatever it is, a full contact combat sport, you know that you don't need to learn self-defense. Like, if the self-defense techniques only work against people who don't train, all your other techniques work anyway. You know, like, if you're still a bit lost, ask yourself this. Well, remember that time you had trained for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and then a new person joined the gym and you trained with that person who didn't know anything, and they couldn't do anything, and you demolish them? You know, like, you don't need to learn specific self-defense techniques to beat someone who doesn't train. If you just train and know how to, in little air quotes, know how to fight, you're going to beat someone who doesn't train anyway. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to learn this like weird fucking group of techniques that only work against people who don't train. It's like, well, all the fucking technique, like, the good thing about jiu-jitsu techniques or learning how to fight is they work against people who don't train, but also people who do train, right? Like,
yeah. Well, this brings up another good point. And as you were describing that, I thought of the whole debate around women's self-defense programs. Have you seen, I think we've mentioned this in the past, but where there's like a 2-day workshop where it's like women's self-defense, and you're going to learn how to defend yourself against an attacker. And there's arguments to be made, like, I'm not making these arguments, but I've seen these arguments that these programs are actually doing more harm than good, because they're filling someone with a false sense of confidence, and they might take actions that they otherwise wouldn't. For example, they might, instead of like running away, they might try and engage, or, you know, that's probably the worst case scenario. And they're like painting an unrealistic picture of self-defense, because my problem with the self-defense techniques, as you were describing them, yeah, I agree with you that it can be a great way to contextualize jiu-jitsu for a brand new person. However, I don't think they're actually going to work for that brand new person, because even if they learn the technique, they drill the technique for a week, you put them in a live scenario, it's completely different. Everything changes. And you know that with rolling. When you learn a jiu-jitsu technique and then you try to apply it to a live scenario, it's not the exact way, same way you drilled it. But the more experience you have with jiu-jitsu and the more time you have with actual full intensity sparring, that's when things start to slow down for you, because you're more accustomed to that environment. I don't think someone that learns self-defense is going to be able to ever apply it.
No. Yeah, I don't think so either. Like, if you've never had the opportunity to essentially train and apply. I don't even think it needs to be self-defense. I think like whatever skill you're trying to acquire,
yeah,
if you never get to use that skill in a real scenario, you know, like I'm sure the first time a paramedic or EMT turns up to some horrific car crash or something, and the first time they see XYZ trauma injuries, they probably, you know, maybe they freeze and, you know, the head paramedic acts to take over or whatever it is. Like, you know, to think that you're going to just learn some shitty self-defense techniques and then 10 years later when someone tries to steal your bag, be able to pull it off. Like, there's no way. Like, there's no way. You know, there's no way. And like you said about you learn technique and then you realize when you try to train how difficult it is. Yeah, I say to beginners who, because sometimes you get beginners and they learn a technique, let's say like a scissor sweep, and then they, you know, whether it's the same day or however long they've been training, they say, oh, it didn't work or it doesn't work. And I'm like, I
love that.
And I'm like, man, think about it like this. If we're doing a boxing class, like it's very easy to punch a boxing bag, isn't it? Like if I teach you or I'm holding the focus mitts and I teach you a combination, it's all well and good for you to punch them. But like, look, and then you go spar someone, look how difficult it is to hit someone when they're trying to not get hit and also hit you back. All of a sudden it's incredibly difficult to punch someone else in the face.
Yep.
You know, like, and this coming from someone who did a bit of Muay Thai but never went into striking, never good at it, never good at hitting people or getting hit. But, you know, I at least got my feet wet and, like, we know it's difficult. That's why not every single MMA boxing match is a knockout in the first – a knockout at all, let alone in the first fucking 10 seconds all the time, because it's so easy to punch someone in the head and knock them out. No.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, right, when they're trying not to get hit. And jiu-jitsu is no different. So, yeah, to think you're just going to self-defense your way out of something. But when it comes to that, when it comes to those women's workshops, I don't know. Like, I've taught some, but I've always been very clear with the kind of, you know, really hammering home the run option. But also just from the beginning, setting the expectation of, I don't want you to walk out of here thinking you're, you know, some unkidnappable person all of a sudden. Like, this is just to give you an idea. And I was also teaching it more from a jiu-jitsu gateway rather than a self-defense workshop, I should mention. Yep. Yep. But it was also like, look, this is to give you an idea of certain scenarios and what it can be like when someone tries to hold you down and whatever and this and that. And, you know, to expose them to jiu-jitsu with the hope that they would then go, wow, this sport looks really cool and I'm going to go, you know, try out this sport. But yeah, I was always very clear that you are not learning. Like, to think in 2 days you're going to become some fucking FBI agent, spy dude who's just going to fuck the world up. No, man, no.
You know what? I even think that depending on the weight discrepancy, I think even a chick, like a female blue belt, would have a really hard time with an untrained male attacker if they're just trying to hurt them. You know what I mean? I think even at that level, you might have a hard time. I don't know where the threshold is.
Yeah, I don't know where the line would be drawn either. You know, yeah. I mean, that's a tough one, like, because, you know, people like to bang the drum of that jiu-jitsu was invented for the smaller, weaker attacker to beat the bigger, stronger attacker. And like, yeah, again, but that's only from an untrained point of view. Obviously, when both parties train, that doesn't work anymore. That's why there's weight divisions and stuff. Mm. But yeah, but obviously a line exists somewhere. And you know that, you know, like, let's say, remember the video that went around a while ago with Gordon Ryan training with the Mountain, the strongman? Yeah. Like, what's his name?
Huff Bjornsson?
Yeah, something like that. And okay, they weren't like, I don't know, it was just like a YouTube Thor short Bjornsson. Or an Insta. Yeah, that's it, Thor. Or YouTube reel or whatever it was. So I don't know. I didn't research into it if they actually had a proper role, so to speak. But I mean, you know, Gordon Ryan's one thing, and obviously that's one of currently the strongest man in the world. But I mean, okay, if we put him, Thor, with Mikey Musumeci, like that, I don't know, man. Like Thor could maybe just pick him up and literally just, if anyone knows the old anime Ninja Scroll, just pick him up and rip his arms off. Like, like the dude's fucking huge, bro.
Body slam him,
like
the discrepancy that high.
Yeah, the Hulk Loki sort of smash, smash, smash. Yeah. Like, where's the line? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I think everything changes once you start getting punched in the face. It's like the famous Mike Tyson quote, like everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And I mean, it applies. And there's other quotes from other jiu-jitsu people like, oh, black belt gets punched, now they're a brown belt, get punched again, now they're a purple belt. I don't necessarily think it's like as cut and dry as that, obviously. But there is some truth to that. And yeah, I don't know. It just promoted an interesting thought. There's a big difference between, you know, learning self-defense or even learning jiu-jitsu and then being thrown in a live scenario where someone, you know, they're under rules. They're trying to like fuck you up and they're going to be punching, scratching or whatever. But I still think having jiu-jitsu is better than no jiu-jitsu in that scenario.
Yeah, like that dude's comment. Imagine dying and going to heaven and then like a guy pulled a gun on you and you stood there and did nothing because you don't train at all. Like, I mean, you know, like it's the same argument than when people come to me and, you know, yeah, make arguments about if it were MMA or whatever. And it's like, yeah, bro, but it's not like I don't train MMA. I'm under no, like, would I do better in an MMA fight than someone who doesn't train anything? Of course I would. But I'm also under no illusions that, like, I could become a white belt if someone punched me in the face. Like, I don't do striking. I don't do MMA. Like, it's you know, like, it's not.
But I think you know, you would beat someone. Like, I think you would beat an MMA fighter if the MMA fighter was, like, 1 year in or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, probably. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I could also get, you know, roundhouse kick to the head, knocked out.
I mean, you could. Like, there's always a puncher's chance, right? That's why they say that. But, I mean, in an actual scenario, if you're sparring, like live sparring or in a MMA fight with someone, maybe they have 1 year or even 2 years experience, and you can close the gap and get them down, man, I don't know.
But there's always, you know, there's always a but this and what if this, you know, the same thing. Like, I think strikers, at least intelligent strikers, should probably have the same thought logic that I do, like about fighting an MMA fighter. You know, we know that the days are well past the style versus style. That was UFC 1, 2, and 3. Like nowadays, even if you get an MMA guy and a boxer and pit it as an MMA fight where it's going to be, you know, grappling versus striking, it's not going to be, because the grappler's going to be training striking leading up to the match. The boxer's going to be training grappling leading up to the match. Like, you know.
And the grappler will definitely win.
Yeah, but we 100%. Know it was proven back in the day that the grapplers won.
Always win,
you know. So, but there's always, even I'm sure there's people who comment on MMA fights, things, probably similar things like, oh, but you know, like, what if he eye gouged you? What if he fish hooked you? Or just kick him in the nuts? It's like, yeah, like, where do you draw the line? Okay, now we say there's no rules. Oh, what if he pulled a knife? Oh, what if he pulled a gun? Oh, what if he
was in a tank?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Or what if he was like, you know, on the other side of the world behind a fucking computer screen with a controller and he was flying a drone? Like, I mean,
the
fuck,
entire
bro.
United States military.
Yeah. You know, like,
I mean, like it expands. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, that is a little bit of a straw man, but I mean, the whole point remains. There is validity to that. So, you know, obviously in a scenario where it's two unarmed people, we can all agree that having grappling is superior to having, you know, nothing. And I would argue that it's superior also to having striking. You always get boxers that jump on to anytime they see the jiu-jitsu thing, they always jump on and you know, it's less so nowadays, but think that they would win in that exchange, win in that fight. And I don't know. I
watched, I can't remember who it was. It was someone famous, very well known within the jiu-jitsu MMA world. So like it, I can't remember who it was. Like it could have been Joe Rogan, could have been Jocko, could have been like a guest who was on one of those podcasts, like, but some, you know, someone in that sort of world. And yeah, like talking about that sort of style versus style, they said something along the lines of, yes, like the boxer, the striker, like you said, there's an expression for it, has a puncher's chance. Like I could get knocked out, you know, before I even get hold of him or whatever. I could, he has a puncher's chance. However, if I get hold of him, he then has zero chance. Like they're in grappling with a untrained, like there is no puncher's chance submission. You know, like, yeah, two grapplers against each other. You see sometimes in matches, like a dude could be losing the whole match and then out of nowhere catches a whatever. Mm-hmm. But he was like, there's no puncher's chance in grappling. Like, yeah, you maybe you knock me out in the very beginning. And that was the early like Hicks and Gracie fights as well. You know, and even the early UFC fights with Hoist and whatever. It was essentially just, man, cover up and run in. You just need to get hold. You just need to not get knocked out. And once you got hold of them, it's game over. They have zero chance now. There is no puncher's chance for them. There's no, you know, everyone has a, you know, a submissions chance. No. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, let me tell you something funny. Like, I guess there's just some people who are so delusional. So I'm not going to mention names only because I'm going to be mentioning this person's family member. So I don't want to mention any names, but one of my students was telling me that over the holiday period, over Christmas, he has this uncle. Oh, an uncle. He has this uncle who trains. Of course, he trains kung fu, and which I don't have a problem with. Right, that's cool. Like, what, you know? I used to train other martial arts, and they were great. They served their purpose and everything. But he trains kung fu. That's not okay. The issue. The issue.
It's pretty funny though.
The issue is he's so deluded. Like somehow they got into whatever conversation about martial arts, jiu-jitsu. And this student is a teenager, so the uncle is, I don't know, let's call him mid-30s or something, an adult. And, yeah, the uncle's just like, oh, man, you know, I would just do this and I would do that and blah, blah, blah. You know, jiu-jitsu doesn't work and this and that. Yeah, but he was this kind of delusional that he invited him down. He was like, man, coming into the gym and do a class, not as in like a challenge way, not as in like, yeah, come in and we'll fuck you up, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah. Yep.
He was like, no, we'll come in and check it out. And everyone's really lovely. And as anyone who's listening has been to my gym and as Kieran will tell you, like, you know, our gym is, we don't have anyone in the gym that is like, oh, Bishop, the new guy. Like, we don't have anyone like that in the gym. That shit doesn't fly. And so we like, Kieran, like looking suspicious. So should we tell everyone the real reason you're in Sweden? yeah, invited him down, and this is literally what he said. You know, he said, no, I won't come down because if I do, I'll – like, and he was deadpan serious. His uncle was serious. He was like, if I do, I'll actually – like, I mean, I'll kill your coach. And he was like, what? And he's like, yeah, you know, so he was asking him, it was like, show me stuff, this, that. And he's like, well, I can't do it because if I do that, you'll die. And if I do this, you'll die.
It sounds
and
like
this,
Aikido. Like,
man.
It sounds like that Aikido shit where it's like the spirit energy shit. You know, those delusional people where they're like, oh, this reason that there's no UFC fighters from that background is because then it would be murder.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I said to him, the student, I literally said to him, I was like, dude, just stop talking to me. Like, I just can't even think about that stuff. It's, I don't know. It's like trying to, I'm, for example, if someone came to me trying to talk to me, educate me, whatever, about the earth being flat, it's not even the fact that I'm not a scientist and I can't really, like, from a scientific point of view, argue that. It's more just like, bro, you're hurting my brain. I don't like, I don't even want to listen to you talk. I don't want to. So he was telling me all this stuff his uncle was saying, doing. I was like, I can't even, bro. Like, that just like really hurts my brain.
His uncle's a bitch.
I prefer to not even know that those people exist. Like, just out of sight, out of mind. I don't want anything to do with it.
No, so that's so dumb, man.
Maybe so what's the username of the person who commented? Maybe I'll ask him if, hey, is this your uncle's username?
Yeah, I'll get it for you. No, that is actually really, really funny. And yeah, I've had similar conversations, but not to that extreme, but something along the lines of, like, this was back when I was a white belt. So, you know, a few years ago now. And the first Christmas, like, home, of course, you know, you wrestle your drunk relatives because it's like the Christmas rite. And obviously I was smashing them. And then after it, my stepdad was like, yeah, you need to work on your this, this, and this, because he used to train karate like way back in the day. And he was like trying to give me advice. And I was like, yep, okay. It was so, you know, along the same sort of lines. He's like, yeah, you know, you might have a real problem with, you know, you need to learn more attacks or something along those lines. Or, you know, you need to do this, this, and that. And I just don't really get it. And whenever like my sister will ask something along the lines of, oh, you know, for her children, oh, what's a good martial art for self-defense? And, you know, my stepdad will be like, you know, he'll say like taekwondo or something like that. I'm just like, no, bro, what the fuck?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, one of the massive benefits that jiu-jitsu has, if you're wanting to learn a martial art for self-defense, is that you know, I mean, okay, I could be wrong, but at least from my exposure to how most people train striking, very few people who like do boxing or Muay Thai or whatever, like actually spar. Like, a lot of people do it, and it is like, I'm not taking anything away from it, but a lot of people, like, they'll box, but they actually just do it, whether they know they're kind of just doing a workout or not. I'm not sure, but they just go and do a class that is a bunch of, you know, like pad work and speed balls and bag work and focus mitts and all this stuff. And they don't actually really ever fight. Mm. But, you know, jiu-jitsu, when you train jiu-jitsu, you always get to roll. Mm. Hey, not like every class, but you know what I mean. Like, so the fact that you actually get to physically experience it. And so when you take that to kids, I think taekwondo, karate, or whatever, like, they're all fine activities for kids. There's still a lot of the skills, the life skills that jiu-jitsu offers a developing kid, those things offer too. So, you know, learning to be punctual, do what you're told, you know, line up here, line up there, like, respect to your classmates, learning how to lose, yeah, respect and all that stuff. But taekwondo for a 6, 7, 8 year old, they're actually not punching and kicking each other, like, really. Or at least you shouldn't be. Like, I mean, I'm not on board with that. Like, telling some 6-year-old to kick another kid in the head as hard as he can, like, that's, you know, but they actually get to do jiu-jitsu. So a 6-year-old gets to feel, without getting hurt, what it's like to have someone on top of them and hold them down. A very real scenario that could play out for a kid who's got many years of school ahead of him, you know. So they actually get to feel what it's like to be pushed and shoved and push someone else and, you know, tackle someone else and hold them down and someone be on top of you and you have to, like, roll them off you, you know. Mm. So they actually – so then, like we were saying – about these 2-day self-defense workshops, it's the opposite of that. Then if this kid does have something happen at school, yeah, maybe they still get beat up because it's adrenaline. Maybe they start crying, whatever, because they're a kid. But the feeling of that physical altercation is not going to be foreign to this kid, you know, whereas they do taekwondo and, you know, even if the kid comes up and does a taekwondo move, like, you're telling me if you have – who do you think's going to fare better in this scenario. I've got a six-year-old who does jiu-jitsu and a bully who comes along and does essentially a jiu-jitsu technique in the sense of shoving him and tackling him and, you know, trying to pin him like a bully would. Who do you think that six-year-old jiu-jitsu kid is going to fare better than the six-year-old taekwondo kid where the bully comes along and like kicks him in the face? Like in both scenarios, the jiu-jitsu kid is having a bully do essentially jiu-jitsu to him and the taekwondo kid is having a bully essentially do taekwondo to him. But like, you see the point I'm trying to make? The jiu-jitsu kid's at least going to be experiencing something that's not foreign and could perhaps fare better. But like,
yeah,
I don't think any six-year-old is getting kicked in the head and because he does taekwondo, he's kind of going to be like, I'm used to that. I can take my roundhouse kick. No.
Yeah. No, so, you do bring up a good point that even with children, if the bully is like 4 years older and is 20 kilos heavier and the kid is, you know, still a timid kid and, you know, maybe they're six or seven or something, they still might lose.
Oh, for sure, man. Especially for kids, like, if like I don't know when the last time is you weighed a kid.
The other day, yeah. So we're down in the park, fucking just grab one.
But I mean, like every kid's different, of course. But I mean, like I got some like 8-year-old kids at the gym, and they might only be like 40 kilos. So if a kid is 20 kilos heavier than him, like imagine it. That's like you having someone who's like 120 kilos, someone who's 50% of your body weight. Like, man,
it's massive. Relative to your body weight as well.
But,
yeah.
You know, 20 kilos for an 8-year-old, yeah, could be half of their body weight. Or, you know, if the kid's younger, man, like, you know, some of the kids only weigh 25 kilos. Mm. If a kid's got 20 kilos on him, man, forget about it. A kid can't do shit. The same way that I would struggle if I had a 200 kilo person on top of me.
Yeah.
Very fucking difficult to do anything against that.
That's actually a good point. I never thought of the weight difference being relative to the body weight rather than just the pure weight advantage. Because I was thinking 20 kilos, yeah, it's a lot, but it's not that much. But for me, because I'm fucking 80 kilos, so it's not that much. But for a kid that weighs 20 kilos, like you said, it's literally double their weight.
But you would have heard me say this before, and I've definitely said it on the podcast before. Like, it depends, like, at what, it's not so much about the weight, but more the threshold. So what is the straw that broke the camel's back? And they're just, for everyone, it's different. But to average it out for most people, I say it's usually around the 100 kilo mark for the average person. But you reach a point where it's not about that they're 5 kilos heavier than you, 10 kilos, 20 kilos, whatever. Once you pass a point, the weight is too much.
Yeah.
So the example I always give is I go, okay, man, like there's two, you know, barbells here with weights on them for you to deadlift, but like they look the same, like the number of plates or whatever, like they look the same, but the difference is one weighs 1 million kilograms and the other weighs 2 million kilograms. Try deadlift them and tell me which one's heavier. It's not going to matter. You're not going to know because you can't fucking move either of them at all. So you reach a certain point where, you know, let's take it a bit to the extreme. You trying to escape side control against someone who is, you know, let's use quite an extreme weight that you don't come across very often, but let's say someone who's 140 kilos versus someone who's 150 kilos, you probably like, they're probably not going to feel any different, you know, because it's like that 140 is above the threshold of kind of the weight that you can move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, I say 100 kilos just to average it out. I go, man, once you're pushing 100 kilos, remembering that we're also talking to 50 kilo girls as well as 100 kilo guys, but you say, man, like 100 plus, like it's a lot of weight to move. Like it just becomes really difficult. Like doesn't matter how strong you are, what position it is, it's a lot of weight to move.
Mm. Yeah. That makes sense. I'm curious though, what do you teach children in the kids' classes about bullying or bullies? Because knowing, you know, everything that we know and you're teaching them jiu-jitsu, what is the conversation around that like?
Yeah, so it's yeah.
Teach them to fight back?
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
I would.
Yeah, I try to teach my son that for sure. I try to, he came home from daycare one day and said that like someone pushed him, and I straight away was like, "Well, did you push back? Like, yeah, fuck that.
Double leg takedown and ground or what?"
But no, I essentially say that that they want to, try run away, and go find a teacher or a parent, and or if the bully is on top of them. I had one kid years ago do this, who like a bully pushed him over or something, and he managed to essentially escape mount. And I'll teach them to, if we're talking about bullies specifically, to pin them, to hold them down until a teacher or an adult comes to help. And that's what this kid did. He was probably 6 at the time. Jeez. Yeah, essentially rolled the bully off of him and like held the bully down until a teacher came. So I'll tell them that'll be the conversation. You're essentially trying to stay safe or immobilize the person until help arrives.
And then hand, teach them to open hand strike. That's not a punch, not a lot of damage, but at least humiliation for the bully.
But that conversation also goes to the parents. Like back to what you said about Taekwondo, I was like, well, let's say your kid does Taekwondo or karate or whatever, and he's being bullied. Even if the bully started it, like I guarantee you, if your kid roundhouse kicks another kid in the head, you're getting a phone call.
Yeah.
And like that ain't playing out well for like there's no way the principal is calling you to say, "I was so proud of how your boy handled the situation."
The roundhouse kick was sick.
Whereas, your kid might still get in trouble if they're seen holding someone else down, but it's very different.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's usually the conversation. But
I've seen a video of it was a schoolyard fight. These two kids were going at it, probably around the age of 12 or something. And one kid full on armbarred the other guy. It was sick. It was fucking like on mount. And he's like doing that. You know how beginners like try and push someone off mount by extending their arms? And you always teach, well, that's a perfect armbar. Well, the kid actually took it. He took the perfect armbar and he full on armbarred this kid. another, speaking of fight videos, there's another video that I find, pretty funny. It was a 16-year-old kid that fought with he would have been like 35, this full-grown man. And the 16-year-old was not a big 16-year-old kid. He was like a smallish 16-year-old. And the 16-year-old kid fucking smashed this guy by getting to his back, essentially. Got in a rear naked choke, choked him out. And the guy was tapping, but he didn't let go. And after the older dude woke up and he's like, "I tapped. You need to respect the tap." He's like, "It's a fucking fight, bro."
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Yeah, it's
imagine
like the
tapping in a fight.
It's like the people who say like with the like. It's not like I would necessarily prioritize an armbar in a street fight.
No,
for obvious reasons, but for argument's sake, when people say, "Oh, but I'll just like bite your hamstring or something," it's like,
with the triangle.
It's like, man, like I know that. No, not with like, imagine you've done an armbar from mount, so your legs line across their face.
Bite your hamstring. Yeah. For it.
And it's like, yeah, but okay. Like humans actually have one of the strongest bite forces out of all mammals. Mm. But it's like, well, I've been bitten by heaps of shit, and don't get me wrong, that'll hurt a little bit, but you've also got to remember, if we're in a street fight, I'm not there kind of waiting for you to tap. Like if I've got you in an armbar, man, like that arm's breaking. I reckon your ability to bite my hamstring versus,
you're not even going to think of it. Like, I don't know. It's the same. Like I have this argument, well, not argument, but this debate, we'll say, with my wife where I'll put her in a triangle and she'll be like, "Yeah, but I'll just bite you." I'm like, "Yeah, well, you could bite me, but you're going to sleep like really quickly."
Yeah.
Like you don't understand. Or if you're in a rear, that's kind of like being in a rear naked choke and be like, "Oh, to get out of it, I'll just bite their arm." Yeah, okay, bite my arm for the whole 3 seconds you're fucking awake.
Yeah.
You're going out.
But the triangle one's even worse because you don't have to commit your arms to it. It's like, put someone in a triangle, oh, but I'll bite your leg. It's like,
I'll punch
okay,
in the
then,
face.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just start hammering your face, bro. Like, are you serious?
Bite away, no, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. Like how you can bite, but you won't be conscious for very long. Yeah, like it's such a silly argument. Or it's like how women think that their best self-defense will be kicking the guy in the nuts. You're just going to piss him off. Yeah, it's going to hurt getting kicked in the nuts, but if you have that much adrenaline, it's not going to stop you. You feel it after. It's just not going to work. Like, yeah, I don't know if it's going to make it worse for you.
Yeah, I don't know if girls know that we sometimes have this superpower that is not always activated, but sometimes we have this superpower that activates where, yeah, the pain is delayed.
Yeah, it's delayed.
Like, you know, like sometimes, I don't know what it is actually. Maybe it's to do with what your adrenaline levels or whatever, but sometimes you get hit in the nuts and you are down instantly. Yeah. But sometimes you get hit and like you've still got another 5-10 seconds and then all of a sudden you're like, man, nah, and then you curl over in a ball.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Pain is delayed. But it does remind me of one time. There was this brand new guy to the gym and you were teaching him like, you know, taking him through like a basically the trial class. I think it was a trial class guy. And you're teaching him back control on me. And then you're like, you know, we're rolling or whatever. You're like, get your hooks in. And he swings his leg around and heel kicks me square in the fucking groin, dude. Yeah. I've never been in so much pain. I was like profusely sweating, like rolling around, like trying not to cry.
Yeah,
like a solid 5 minutes. Oh my God, I'll never forget that. I've never been in more pain in my life.
Sometimes it's debilitating, eh?
It was crazy.
Yeah. It's funny, eh? It's such a funny thing as well that you can, when you see it happen to someone else, it still hurts you a little bit.
Yeah, referred pain.
It's like when I particularly see people like, you know, blow out knees and stuff. I've a lot of referred pain with knee issues. But anyway, like I just to close off what we're talking about, there's always a, yeah, but what if this and what if that? Yeah, man, like that, there comes a point where it's no longer, actually, here we go. There's not a perfect way to summarize it because I can't remember exactly what he said, but I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson talk about like, you know, the way scientists think about problems and whatever. And he was saying that, you know, you get to a point where it's no longer an efficient use of your time, or it's no longer productive to ask why, you know? So I can't remember the exact example he gave, but he said something like, oh, why is it that if I knock this glass off the table, it falls? Oh, because gravity. And then he mouthed off whatever equation and this and this and this. Oh, but then why is it that, you know, the velocity is this and that? Oh, because this is, but it gets to a point where it's like no longer productive to keep asking, but why is an atom that size? But like, why is this attracted to this and not attracted? Like at some point, it's just a waste of time to keep asking why. Why does water boil at 100 degrees Celsius? And then you go like, how small do you need to go atomically before there's no point asking why anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it can become counterproductive.
So same sort of thing with these fucking self-defense arguments, man, you know. Like, oh, but what if he pulls a gun? Well, then I'm fucked, bro. Then I'm fucked. Like, shit, you know. But what if he doesn't?
What if he doesn't? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What if he doesn't have a fucking gun? Oh, I like that. All right.
Okay. Well, so I want to mention something interesting.
Yep.
Which is, so I said it's, again, listening from this one podcast. But the reason I want to mention this one is because as people who have listened to me crap on enough would know that I really like to either explain things, jiu-jitsu with analogies, or I like to help students think about a position, a technique or whatever in a different way. Not necessarily in a different way, but if it can be phrased in a certain way that helps you go, oh, you know, and I like that in teaching and in learning, that sometimes – maybe a piece of information that you know very well, but someone gives you that information worded differently or explained slightly differently, and it makes you have this kind of like, man, like I've never thought about it like that. What a great way to explain that. Mm. And this was Hodger talking about, a cross-collar choke. And he just said something regarding his grips, and I'd never really thought about it like this. So I wanted to share it. So whenever I'm teaching a collar choke, I'll always mention something along the lines of, with collar chokes, once you set your grips, you don't get a chance to readjust them. You know, so if your grips aren't right and you're applying the squeeze and whatever, you're not going to get the choke, you're just going to gas out your hand. So take the time to set your grips properly, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. What Hodges said, and he didn't exactly say these words, I've kind of changed it a little bit, but he was talking about the importance of the first hand grip. Because what he said that I'd never thought about, but I knew but never thought about it like this, is that the second grip is never as good as the first grip. So the first grip has to make up the slack. You know, so if you imagine that your grips combined need to equal 100% is the break point for the choke being effective enough to make someone tap, your second hand's maxes out, your second hand grip maxes out, for argument's sake, at 40%. Mm. So if your first grip isn't 60%, like the choke's never going to happen. You have to know that that second grip will never be equal. It's never as good as the first grip. Mm. So if the first grip is not good enough, whatever that is, 60% to just give you a metric, then, you know, and he said, yeah, so if I don't get the first grip sufficient, he's like, I never go for the choke. I don't go for the choke. You know, I know there's slack in the second grip. I know the second grip is never good enough. Yeah. So the first grip has to work harder. And I was like, man, that's such a good way to think about it and explain it. And I guess even though I had those facts in my brain, they were never orientated like that.
You know, right. The second grip is always dog shit.
Yeah. I mean, and think, even if you get the most perfect second grip, it's never as good as the first grip.
No.
Right. It's, yeah. So,
because it's thumb in and like whatever.
Or whatever choke you're doing, usually, right? Yeah, it's never as good. Like, think, even if you're doing a collar choke from the back, right?
Mm. The first grip is always better. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that second grip, you could get the most, like, you know, you know, here, Kieran, take all the time as you want. Like, you got to put your second grip first, but put it wherever you want. Grab as tight as you want, like wherever. Like, the perfect second grip is nowhere near as good as the first grip. You're like, the first grip is what it's all about. And, yeah, just the way he said that first grip needs to preemptively take up the slack that you know is coming in the second grip is what's really important. And I really like that. I thought that was such a good way to think about it, explain it. I've never had it, those bits of information orientated in that order, that it was a bit of a fuck yeah, what a great way to think and teach that, the importance of your grips. And so that's what I wanted to share.
No, I like that. Well, I wanted to talk about I released a video yesterday. It's called BJJ Injury Risk is Real. Here's What to Do About It. It's basically leveraging a bunch of studies that have been done on injuries in jiu-jitsu. Most of these studies are survey-based studies, but some assess injury rates on competitions. No-Gi Worlds, for example, was studied, I can't remember which year off the top of my head. I think it was like 2013 was studied. But here are some interesting statistics from one of the larger survey-based studies on injury rates in grappling. So if I was to ask you, what percentage of grapplers will take at least 1 2-week absence from training due to injury over a 3-year period, what would you put that percentage to be from 0 to 100%?
That at least
2 weeks
will take at least two in a 3-year period.
In a 3-year grappling period, yeah.
100%?
No, not quite. 68.8%. So 69.
I think some people are lying.
Yeah. Well, there are problems with this study, and I'll talk about that. But according to the study, 68.8% of grapplers. I've seen some studies that the number's more closer to 90%. So, yeah. And what they also found is, here's one for you. Do you think your risk of injury will be higher or lower the more experienced you are in jiu-jitsu? So the higher rank you are, do you think that you'll be more likely or less likely to be injured in the same period of time?
I think less likely, with ignoring factors of more experienced people are usually older and have already other injuries and, you know, body starts falling apart as it is. But if we ignore age as a factor, I think you're less likely to get injured when you're more experienced.
You're more likely to be injured the more experienced you are, according to this survey.
If it's based off competition jiu-jitsu, then I would.
No, it's not. They do talk about competition and how likely you are to be injured during a comp. I don't have those stats right here, but it did. That was one of the survey questions. But this is just in general from sparring. They even counted like drilling and stuff like that, being injured in drilling or warming up, just jiu-jitsu in general. So the higher belt rank you are, the more likely you are to be injured in accordance with this survey study. Very interesting. And the problem is also amplified by age and gender. So women are also more likely to be injured than men. And the older you are, the more likely your injury risk to be as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if the experience factor's got to do with, like, you know, by the time you get brown belt, you're already like carrying a bunch of chronic injuries that can kind of just go at any moment. So, yeah.
But I did see the study that I mentioned, that I believe it was 2013 No-Gi Worlds, where they tallied and studied all the injury rates and where they came from, blah, blah, blah. In that study as well, the higher belt rank you are in that competition, the more likely you were to be injured.
Yeah, in comp for sure.
In comps, yeah. And that makes sense because, you know, the higher belt you are, the more at stake you have, air quotes, and the more lethal your opponents. So when they catch something, they're going to break it, right? So that makes perfect sense. Here's some more statistics that you might find interesting. The most commonly injured sites were the lower extremities and the upper extremities at 45.7% for the lower and 30.2% for upper. And specifically, the knee and the shoulder had the highest rates of injury at 27.1% and 14.6%.
Yeah, I would have guessed knees and shoulders.
Yeah. 77.6% of injuries occurred during sparring, and I'm assuming the other injuries occurring during like warm-ups, drilling, etc. I already mentioned older age is a significant risk factor. Here's an interesting one for you. What do you think the injury likelihood is between submissions, takedowns, and guard passes? Just which one do you think has the most likelihood of injury out of submissions, takedowns, and guard passes?
Takedowns.
Close. Takedowns was second at 26%. Submissions was number one at 30%, and guard passes at 24%.
Yeah, I figured it was submissions or takedowns. Mm.
Yeah. Here's another interesting one. What techniques? There's three submissions that had the highest risk of injury out of those all submissions. So like if you indicated that you have been injured by a submission, they ask you which submission, right? Yeah. So what do you think would be the most, the highest percentage?
Armbar, Kimura, and some type of leg lock.
You fucking nailed it. It's armbar number one, Kimura number two, and heel hook number three.
Yeah, yeah. I put leg lock because I wasn't sure how current the survey was, whether it was going to be heel hook or... Yeah.
It was 2019.
Those three for sure.
And what's really interesting is I asked myself in the video, I sort of, you know, spoke about this, but sort of only surface level. When I was looking at this, I asked myself, why? Why are those three submissions the highest? And the rationale that I came back to is not necessarily that they're the most dangerous. I think that they're just some of the most attempted submissions in jiu-jitsu. They're the most common and they're the air quote highest percentage, right? And I think that makes sense when you look at armbar, Kimura, and heel hook. They're some of the most, and you take out or chokes because there's, you know, they're not joint submissions, so the risk of injuring a joint in a rear naked choke isn't there. So when I put that together, and then I was like, okay, well, how can I prove or disprove this? So I looked up the submission rates in ADCC 2017 to the most recent 2022. And the highest submission rates in across all three were the rear naked choke, which is not a joint submission, so we take that one out. And then we have the armbar and heel hook. So
yeah,
that was the rationale.
That checks out for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, interesting, eh? Yeah, I think definitely the factors of age and stuff start to contribute to it as well. And I watched a video today about, you know, what happens to the body as it ages, and was a bit irrelevant to the topic now. But yeah, I mean, like, man, shit just starts to fall apart. Good thing, yeah, get some duct tape and you're good to go.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so look after your elbows, shoulders, and knees, people.
Yeah. Watch out for them armbars.
Yeah. Like, all right, man, yeah, that was cool. I don't have anything else to add, so we'll leave it there. Guys, thank you so much for listening. If you pull a gun on me, you can have my shit, okay? Now imagine someone pulls a gun on me and they're like, I don't want your shit. I just want to watch your butt scoot. Like, okay. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. And any questions, you know where you can find us. Shoot us a message. Otherwise, we'll catch you next time. Laters.